Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:10 PM. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 20th, and I thought that today I would kick off and look at the bond markets because we don't generally start off the audio with the bond markets, and there are some interesting things happening right now. Well, the first of those is if we look at the daily chart of the 10-year Treasury, it does have base formation characteristics, and it is rallying towards the upper side of that base formation. And if we then go ahead and look at the weekly chart, we can see that the trend mean right now coincides with the upper side of that range. Well, we've certainly had this rather jerky but staircase step sequence downtrend in treasuries since the middle of 2016, and so far this remains a reasonably consistent decline. But when we look at the fact that there is an enormous short position in treasuries, then that I think has to be brought into account. So I've saved the chart here. We can see that this short position is about as large as we saw back at the peak in 2016. So that's, I think, something that really needs to be taken into account, because are short sellers prepared to hold on if we see a rally back up and above the trend mean? Certainly if we see a failed rally, then they may be encouraged to put those short positions back on, but there is certainly the potential here for the price to rally. But I think that's rather interesting when we look at the yield curve, because it's down to 23 in a bit, and this has contracted again in here today. Well, we know that people on the Federal Reserve Voting Committee are looking at this because they've told us that as much. But the reality is we don't know whether the Fed wants to have a recession and whether they have the confidence or hubris to think that they can control the extent to which we have an economic contraction. That's certainly something that is out there on the horizon at some stage. But I think it is worth pointing out that when the yield curve does go inverted, we don't get a contraction for anything from 6 to 18 months later. So I think that's rather important to point out. But if, for example, someone had a few billion dollars to punt in this market, well, then you could pressure the shorts and probably create an inverted yield curve, considering that we're really only talking about a 23 basis point relative move. When we look at, for example, the 2-year treasury, well, the 2-year treasury is at 2.58%. Well, if we look at the on the run bond, then, and let me just pull up the right Bloomberg chart. I'm afraid I've got it up on the same one. Then this is the on-the-run bond. And if we look at the yield, it's down to about 2.8%. And therefore, we're not talking about a great move. If we look at the yield calculator, let's say that prices go up another 2.5 basis points. Well, that takes us down to a yield of 2.53% based on the price right now. And that's an inverted yield curve. So that would require an additional move of 2.5 basis points on the 2-year as well to avert the condition. But what it does suggest is that we're at a very tight level already, and that if enterprising traders want to create an inverted yield curve situation, is certainly within their means, and not least because we're in the middle of August and the market is comparatively illiquid relative to when everybody gets back to work after Labor Day or St. Ledger's Day. So certainly a lot of interesting things happening in the bond markets. Something else that is I think really very clear is that a lot of bad news has already been priced into emerging markets. And when we look at the emerging markets index, one thing that I caution is that the emerging markets index is primarily weighted by China. It really is very much reflected by what is going on there, and it does continue to trend lower. So even though the Chinese market was in positive territory in here today, and but it is still at a new low, and it does have some work to do to constitute a failed downside break in here. What is I think probably perhaps improving the chances that that will occur is that the banks were a bit steadier, and they have continued to hold above the low posted in July. So that does hold out the prospect that we have a short-term low in the Chinese market. But even the most casual look at the medium-term chart highlights just how much work there is to do to unwind this short position that has been opened up in China, and also to really repair some of the damage. Well, Tencent is a major constituent in that emerging markets index, and it was in positive territory in here today, and that's a substantial bounce off the lows that we saw at the end of last week. But the progression of lower rally highs remains in place. It really has a lot of work to do. Now, the Chinese government has banned new games from being released on the mainland, so that's a rather big obstacle for a company like Tencent, which is when games account for a substantial proportion of its revenue. But of course, it's also a headwind for some of the more established game companies, and Activision Blizzard, having bounced from the region of the trend mean on successive occasions since it broke out in 2013, is now back in that area once more. So this is a big level for some of these computer game companies. Then, when we think about what's going on in the emerging markets, well, junk bond spreads in the USA right now are tighter than the spreads on emerging market sovereign debt. And I think that's worth highlighting, considering the fact that sovereigns have the ability to tax their constituents, and they also have their currencies on which they can rely. So the fact that you have junk bond spreads that are still completely inert, and the volatility that we've had in the emerging markets suggests that a lot of bad news has probably already been priced in. But against that background, you continue to see stress in isolated parts of the emerging markets. And I think this is where we really have to delineate between countries that have got improving standards of governance and those that don't. And that's, I think, a big change that has occurred really, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years. Prior to that, we used to be able to think that improving standards of governance were almost a given in a number of the emerging markets. But that's just simply not the case any longer. The fact that that Venezuela has gone for a 95% devaluation and is tying its sovereign currency to a crypto is rather reflective of the rather incredible environment that we have there. What is also, I think, this is a year-to-date chart of the petro's price, and it surged higher last week and then fell 47% in here today. That's a measure of just how much confidence cryptocurrency investors have in the or how much faith they have in the Venezuelan administration holding up their end of any bargain. And not least since the new sovereign bolivar has been tied to oil production, and they're just not producing any oil anymore. The Turkish lira has had bounced last week, and it was in negative territory again in here today. The Brazilian real is still weak and is hit a new reaction low in here today, and is actually at a new closing low as well. This looks like a pretty just a rhythmic process of consolidation prior to additional weakness. So what that suggests is that when we look at countries where you do have deteriorating standards of governance, there is no mercy from the perspective of the international community. They are going to continue to pressure these currencies. And when we look at the Colombian peso, it has pushed back above 3,000. This is now in the region of the dollar's progression of lower rally highs. So if the peso is going to bounce, well, this is about where it really should be getting about it. Staying with Latin America, that's sorry, the wrong. I'm just pulling up the Peruvian sol. So that is also a country where we see that the dollar has just broken out. And that was against a background where the sol was really quite steady. So, and certainly you haven't seen Peru on the international media at all. And yet here also we see some selling pressure coming through on the currencies. The Indian rupee had broken down to a new low last week, but it was a little bit firmer in here today. The issue for both India and Indonesia is that they have elections coming up, and they could be tighter races than either ruling party had bargained for. So there is the potential for fiscal or a lax fiscal environment if they do think that there it might be a close race. In other words, they'll try and buy the election. So that could put downward pressure on their currencies, but these currencies have not declined in nearly the same fashion that we've seen elsewhere. And particularly with the Indian market, India's Nifty 50 has continued to advance. And India is on the cusp of a digital revolution. This is something that is going on in the background. It is very much a factor for the companies on the index, whereas inflation is more of a challenge for the government. Well, you have record floods right now, and this was against the background where the monsoon had been somewhat disappointing. Well, that is no longer the case. Of course, it is going to constitute a challenge for administrations in southern India, not least because of the record size of the floods, but certainly no drought conditions either. But one, I think, interesting point is this has been a very weak storm season so far in the Atlantic basin, and potentially because there is an evolving El Nino. But generally speaking, El Niños create a dry set of conditions in much of Asia and some of the sugar-producing regions. Well, sugar prices are at new reaction lows in here today. They are accelerating lower. There is no evidence just yet that this decline is over. And it's a pretty similar story for coffee. And Arabica was at a new reaction low in here. We have to look at more than 10 years of data to register the last time that we saw Arabica coffee below 100 cents. So this is a rather important breakdown. And if it is sustained, well, the next area of potential support is at 50. So this is a rather important level. If the Arabica contract is going to find support, it really would want to be getting about it. Then when we look at the Robusta contract, we don't have quite as much back history since the contract was reconstituted, but it has been somewhat steadier. So that suggests that the real selling pressure is coming through on that Arabica contract. Well, when we look at the pressure that's coming to bear on the emerging markets, a lot of it, I think, has to be linked to the pressure that has been coming on the respective currencies because of the strength of the US dollar. The Latin America dollar index has encountered resistance in the region of the upper side of that underlying range, and this is not a bullish looking chart. Meanwhile, the Asia dollar index is really quite oversold on the downside, and it is well off the lows that were posted last week. So that is holding out the prospect for a reversionary rally. And what it, I think, highlights is that where bargain hunting might take place, that it's probably likely to be focused within the Asian region rather than Latin America, where there really are a lot of not only market risks but political risks as well. The potential unwinding of the very large short position in treasuries could have a knock-on effect for the stock market. What I think is interesting is that yields and stocks have been rising together. So, therefore, is there the potential that people were shorting bonds to as something of a hedge against their long positions in equities? That I think is something that is a point that we'll see explored in the event that treasuries do start to rally from current levels. Now, the S&P 500 was in positive territory in here today, and it is coming back up towards the peak that we saw in January. The Dow Jones, having found support last week around the 25,000 level, pushed on to new recovery highs, and it is now approximating the peak from the rebound at towards the end of February. Well, there is a short-term overbought condition. We may see some pause of consolidation, but this continues to look like a recovery scenario. And the fact that it has continued to find support in the region of the trend mean every time it is pulled back is rather heartening from the perspective of the bulls. Now, if we look at the, sorry, I'm not typing particularly effectively, the Russell 2000, then that has been largely range bound since breaking out earlier this year, but it still remains a reasonably consistent uptrend. And having broken out early, it's likely to represent a lead indicator of future trouble. Then the S&P 500 Banks Index has rallied to break its progression of lower rally highs since that peak in January, and it has been consolidating and it has held that breakout. This is reasonably positive action, and as long as that 340 point level is held, we can give the benefit of the doubt to additional higher collateral ranging. But this performance, relative to the performance that we're seeing in Europe, is rather a standout. European banks have just been unable to hold a rally for at least the last 2 weeks. They're still at new lows. And this just is not looking like a bullish chart. It really does look like we're going to see the lows retested. So that helps to highlight just what the challenges are in Europe, and most particularly with the populist administration in Italy, that with their efforts already underway to disenfranchise Atlantia from its contracts to control the well, at least part of the toll road network, then that does hold out the prospect for that's a big question in terms of governance. Let's simply put it that way, because minority shareholder interests and upholding of contracts is obviously something that investors in any country want to see it before they can really put their full faith in. In any country to invest in, that if you sign a contract that you anticipate that it will be met and not cancelled, regardless. Now, that doesn't hold out. That doesn't mean that any company can't be fined for egregious or neglect. But the reality is that they're being completely disenfranchised if the efforts currently underway persist, and that is acting as downward pressure for all Italian assets, because who's to know who's next? And again, for the banking sector, that is just not good news. That's something that is, I think, weighing on the Italian markets, and it continues to deteriorate. Well, BTP yields have first step above the base characteristics. Now, the yield was somewhat steadier in here today, but it's a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to really confirm that this is anything other than a pause in an expansion of yields for Italy. If it is Italy which represents the risk in Europe, well, German yields continue to contract, and the yield experienced, bonds started finding support in the region of the trend mean 2 weeks ago, and the pattern of contraction persists. When we think about where the risks are in Europe, well, Germany is the best capitalized of just about any country in the region, and it has benefited more from the weak euro and the euro generally than just about any other country. Well, the euro is at 114, and there is the potential that we're going to see some further unwinding of the short-term oversold condition, but the first real test here will be whether it can sustain a move back up and into that overhead trading range. It is right now unwinding the short-term oversold condition, but it has a lot of work to do to unwind what has been really quite consistent decline so far, and there is the potential that it will fail to push back up into that overhead range. And considering the momentum that we have right now, we may have the answer to that question sometime this week. Well, with the dollar starting to ease a little, that has acted as at least a short-term tailwind for gold, and gold prices are unwinding that decline that we saw in the latter half of last week. But this is still a downtrend, and as it comes back up towards that $1,200 level, the big question is whether it can break the progression of lower rally highs. There is absolutely no doubt that it is oversold in the short term, and it has at least an $80 overextension relative to the trend mean, and that's even after the rebound that we've had in the last three sessions. So there is certainly potential for a rebound and a short covering rally, but it does have to do more to really confirm that we have a peak, or excuse me, or a low of more than short-term significance. Well, silver prices had broken down in an emphatic fashion last week, and so far the rebound has been pretty modest. So when we look at that on a weekly basis, it is right in the region of the lows that we saw in the middle of 2017. That was a spike low back then. It has come down in a more orderly fashion on this occasion. It really does need to sustain a move back above $15 to if the support building hypothesis is to continue to be given the benefit of the doubt. And platinum is potentially coming back up towards the $800 area. That represents the lower side of that overhead trading range. It really does need to go back above 800 and in a dynamic manner to signal a failed downside break. Meanwhile, palladium, which had also been pulling back but has been the standout performer among the precious metals, or the precious stroke industrial metals, has been rebounding, and it is now back testing that progression of lower rally highs. It has unwound a good portion already of the overextension relative to the trend mean, but the trend mean has turned downwards, and it really would need to sustain a move back above it to question the overall downward bias. Having broken that incredibly consistent progression of higher reaction lows that persisted for more than 2 years, this really is a large inconsistency relative to the previously very consistent trending phase. So it is going to require more to rebuild confidence. And copper prices have also bounced off their short-term lows, but again, this has been a major loss of uptrend consistency. And so far, the rebound has been reasonably modest. It has taken 3 days to unwound the decline that it took 1 day to post last week. So this is also where the lower side of the range is, and it is really for the bulls to prove that we can see a push back up into that overhead range. Well, when we look at commodities that have been doing had been doing better, even uranium, which is already at very low levels, is right back on its lows. So this the question now, I think, is whether we're going to see the price. Let me see, that's not the right chart. Excuse me, that's VIX. There we go, that's uranium. Excuse me. Uranium prices have been firm. Now, when we look at this chart, it's been completely inert over the course of the last maybe 10 sessions. When we look at it on a weekly basis, we have base formation characteristics. And I think the most important point is that we have a progression of higher reaction lows. And there is the potential here that the condition that has evolved, particularly with the largest producer, Cameco, buying on the spot market rather than producing itself because it's unprofitable. Well, that says a lot about where the balance of supply and demand is right now. That if it's uneconomic for the largest producer to produce, then that is going to unwind the excess supply reasonably quickly. And I think that's what we're starting to see with this base formation. So there is the potential here that uranium is going to surprise on the upside. And I think that is most particularly interesting because the commodity complex has been under such pressure for much of the last few months. Oil prices today were in positive territory and they have bounced from the region of the trend mean. They have not yet broken that downward bias over the last 6 weeks. But so far, this remains a reasonably consistent environment where we have seen reversions to the mean and then pretty impressive bounces subsequently. So, this is an area where oil prices should find support, and we're starting to see at least tacit evidence that that is beginning to be the case. Now, when we zone in on what's going on in the UK, well, the FTSE 100 has been very range bound, but it has been a little bit steadier over the last few sessions, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. I think the most important thing is that it holds a 7,000 level. That represents the upper side of the underlying almost 17-year range. And as long as it is doing that, then we can conclude that this is still a bullish environment. Another market that has been that has broken up and out of a very long range is Taiwan, and the index is now back in the region of the trend mean. We've had a number of failed upside breaks above the 11,000 level, and then you still have the progression of higher reaction lows. This is starting to create a wedging characteristic, which is consistent with a type 2 top. A massive reaction against the prevailing trend would complete that top. So there is certainly risk in Taiwan right now. And when you look at the news and the number of countries that are being put under pressure by China to cut off diplomatic ties with Taiwan, well, we can imagine where the pressure might come on the market. So I think it is worth watching. But if it can continue to hold that move above 10,000, we can conclude that it's in a bullish environment. So this is a rather do or die, I think, moment for the Taiwanese market. I think when we take a big step back and look at everything that's going on, well, emerging markets now need to be addressed on their individual characteristics. I don't think it's appropriate to look at the MSCI emerging markets and draw any clear conclusions because it is so heavily weighted by China. There are going to be, I think, very attractive buying opportunities coming through in these emerging markets over the course of the next while. So I think that's an important point, but it's probably going to be tied to the dollar, and the dollar is overbought in the short term. So there is a scope for a reversionary rally, at least in some of the emerging markets. But I think it is the bond market that currently represents where we could see a source of volatility starting to emerge, and I think that is where I think most people or I think we need to be paying particular attention. And if the Federal Reserve is encouraged to stop raising interest rates, well, that could act as a catalyst for an acceleration on stock markets. And the fact that the Nasdaq 100 has continued to hold its breakout above the 7,000 level is admirable because there is a substantial rotation going on within the technology sector. Certainly, Tesla has been in the news, and not least because of Elon Musk's rather tearful admission that he's been on Ambien. I think we'll see, but that may be used as grounds for temporary insanity if his subpoena with the SEC doesn't go as planned. But Tesla shares were in mildly positive territory in here today, bouncing again from the $300 level. But this doesn't look like a particularly consistent chart any longer. And Nvidia announced last week that it doesn't anticipate having any revenue from the cryptocurrency mining sector this year. Well, there is certainly a loss of momentum evident this year in Nvidia's shares. And with the failed upside break that it posted earlier this year, well, now the question is whether the progression of higher reaction lows is going to hold. And Netflix, and I do regard both Tesla and Netflix as the canaries in the coal mine. It did bounce today from the region of the trend mean, so that is encouraging. I think it would be a rather it would not be encouraging if we saw the price taking out that psychological $300 area, but it has bounced, and as long as it is holding that region of the trend mean, I think we can remain reasonably sanguine about the technology sector, or at least the high yield segment of the technology sector, I think would probably be the most appropriate way of thinking about that. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.